Welcome to the Royale Political Wire with Next STL. This is Stephen Smith. I am the board operator and the owner of the Royale. Thank you for tuning in to our podcast here. And today we have some very special guests, St. Louis Dreamers, and we have our host who really handles the show, Maureen Hanlon. Say hello, Maureen.
Hello. It's Maureen Hanlon, local woman, back at it. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Tonight, we have the privilege of talking to some local players in our activist scene. So can we just go down the line and can each of you introduce yourselves?
Yes, so we'll am Rigo, and I am a member of the Mo Dreamers board.
I am Susie, and I am also a member of the Mo Dreamers board.
And I am JD, and I'm also a member of the Mo Dreamers board.
So, what is Mo Dreamers?
We strive to work tirelessly for the basic rights, dignity, and justice for all marginalized people with a focus on the migrant community.
My apologies. Technical difficulties as always.
Check.
Okay, now we're good. Sorry about that.
Okay, one more time.
We strive to work tirelessly for the basic rights, dignity, and justice for all marginalized people with a focus on the migrant community.
So how did each of you come to be a member of this organization? Are you the, is it fair to say you're the founders of the organization or parts of the founders of the organization?
Actually, JD's sister, Naomi, founded the organization, but she went off to college and kind of left it in our hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's currently in Connecticut, and long distance it wouldn't work for an organization. So it has been in our hands since then, and we've tried to do everything to keep it going.
Okay. So describe the organization a little bit. What are your? So we know your mission. What are your goals and what are your tactics?
Okay, so one of the first things we're doing is obviously representing those under DACA. And beyond that, we also represent the Hispanic and other ethnic communities. We try to do our best to be intersectional and just really strive with everyone because we understand that struggle. So that's why we try to connect and be out there as much as we can and use our voices the way others can't.
Yeah, we also support other communities, like the Black Lives Matter movement, and
I'd say right now, the main goal is a DREAM Act. That's what we're fighting for right now.
In case people listening don't know, what would a DREAM Act, what would your version of a DREAM Act look like?
Okay, so we don't, when we say DREAM Act, we mean clean. And by clean, we mean no border security, no extra spending on that, no further deportations. Instead, we should be trying to fix the system that is completely broken, from my point of view, and some pathway to citizenship for those under DACA, instead of keeping them confined to 2 years at a time with the fear that maybe one time they won't meet those standards, that one time they won't be eligible, and the end of the career here will be an end. And that's a more than just a life issue, that's a security issue, because not everyone has the privilege of returning safely to what we may or may not call home, because many of us have been here for more than half of our lives. So that's what it consists of.
Yeah, also, it's not just the DACA recipients, it's also the 11 million.
Who are the 11 million?
It's like our parents, everybody who's undocumented in this country, not just Latinos, but mm-hmm. people from Asia, people from Africa, people from all over the world.
So where does the 11 million statistic come? So the 11 million is a statistic of how many people in this country are living here but don't necessarily have the correct documentation? Is that the right way to say that?
Just about.
So with the Clean Dream Act, that means not criminalizing the parents. further selfless act
to bring...
Sorry, keep going to my microphone.
Not criminalizing parents that selflessly brought their children here for a better life.
Okay. So talk to me about... So how did each of you get involved in political activism? Like, what age were you? What were you? What was your first kind of experience?
I started my senior year of high school when I didn't like the approach that my religion class was taking on what I call anti-feminism, and also just the general racism that was going on in my school.
What did you do to fight that?
Well, I started by putting stickers on my locker that had slogans like equal rights for gay people and a Black Lives Matter button and that kind of thing. And then it kind of lifted off and other people started doing that.
Yeah.
And then we started a diversity like conference type thing where people from WashU would come in and teach us about white privilege and how a lot of the people at my school were white privileged and it was time to acknowledge it and do something about it.
Did you find, what was the reception you got to the stickers initially? Were people, did you feel a lot of support initially or was there a lot of pushback initially?
A little bit of both. I think the teachers were not very happy about it, but the students definitely took it and ran with it.
Yeah. What about the other two of you? What was your first kind of like political act?
I mean, I've been protesting or like going to marches for like a while now. Yeah. Like my sister has been in the movement for a long time and like, I don't really remember. I just remember being dragged onto the street to do it, but you know, I like it. So I'm glad I was dragged into it.
For me, I was working most of my high school career and was really busy until I actually applied and received DACA status.
Okay.
Shortly after, I realized that a lot of things weren't what they should have been or what they should be. And after that, in senior summer, I was asked by a friend of mine to be a part of the group. Before that, I was... there's a backstory. We can talk about that later. To what the group really started off as, but it became more evident that we should be talking to our representatives. So a friend of mine approached me and asked me if I would be a member and lead. And I stood up later on that year in the fall. And ever since then, it's just really been moving. It's been touching to keep on going. And that's what I strive for.
So is it safe to say your group gets asked a lot of questions about just immigration law in this country, period? Just the basic structure of how the law works?
Yeah. Most of the time, if we're actually going to a panel of some sort, we do have people who we know that are specifically law. So they're lawyers and such who we'll have, just so that we don't have to go over all those answers ourselves and we can just focus on the main course of what we know and our experiences. So yes, we do get asked. We don't always take the front for that though.
Yeah. What do you think is the biggest like misconception that you hear over and over again from people?
Oh, that people should just come into the country legally instead of illegally. But there is no way to do that.
So a big one is they don't pay taxes. Personally, that's really offensive because I can't list the amount of years and amount of dollars my parents have paid in taxes over and over again, and everyone says they don't pay taxes. That's a really big lie. And you just have to be educated before you really speak.
Why do you think... So, I mean, I think that's an interesting question. Why, like, you have to be educated before you speak. Why do you think there are so many misconceptions? Like, that people persist in believing these things? Like, do you think it's just a kind of, like, a racism thing? Do you think it's kind of a bigotry thing?
personally, I've dealt with a lot of people in all sorts of variations, and I can tell you that it's all types of situations that they're in. Education is key to anything, and in this case specifically, it's really hard to get educated about the law of immigration, and depending on where you're from, where you're at, you're not going to know the same things. You're not going to hear the same things. If you don't meet the people, you won't know who they really are. And the first thing is interaction. Interaction with the community is very big. It opens up the door. It opens up your eyes to see what is really going on, what they really are. So I think that's one thing, communication. Another thing is our system itself, it doesn't really promote the idea of welcoming. And aside from that, if you're born and raised in a fashion that does not welcome outsiders, you're not going to want an outsider. You're not going to see that person as the same person that you are. You're not going to welcome them into your home the same person you would, the same way you would to anyone else that wasn't their skin color or anything. So.
Yeah, I think it's mostly how they were raised that, like, they have that mentality. Mm-hmm. Because I had, like, a mentality about certain things because of the way I was brought up.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I, like, learned from about those things, I changed my perspective on those things.
Yeah, I noticed that your mission statement, I think, had pretty front and center the idea of being intersectional, right? So talk to me about what that means to you. Like, so you obviously are being asked a lot of questions about a specific issue, right? But what does it mean to you to be intersectional even as you're advocating for that specific issue?
I think it means that to acknowledge that not all DACA recipients are Latino. There are DACA recipients from all over the world. And just generally advocating for other issues like the Black Lives Matter movement and transgender rights movement and stuff like that, along with the DACA movement, because it's a melting pot of oppression and we all have to work together if we're gonna fight it.
So speaking of fighting it, talk to me about some of your tactics. So your organization has a goal, and you've been obviously active, you've done media appearances, you've tried to kind of educate the public, you're working with these other groups. So are you primarily targeting lawmakers, or is it general public members? Like, what is your strategy to get to this mission?
Should I go ahead?
It kind of really brought to light what we should be doing back in October, I believe, or don't remember what month specifically. This was late fall. We were invited by Congressman Clay. We and 20 others, he just wanted 20 DACA recipients to show up for a picture day.
Mm. He wanted 25.
First of all, if we're already seen as numbers, we get that. Why do you just have to use us now just for your publicity, just for re-election? I think that is a very inappropriate use of another person. It was very offensive. Therefore, we went ahead and we responded by saying that first, we wouldn't want just 2 minutes. We should not be limited in what and how much we should say. No media, because you don't know the risk. And a list of other things. It was 3 things total that we really wanted. And soon after, we were completely almost attacked by his assistant through Facebook, which was completely unprofessional. We asked to be replied to in a professional manner, which that was not met. Soon after, we held a meeting to figure out what we were gonna do about all of this, and an uninvited representative of Congressman Clay showed up. And we did not know anything about this, so we asked him to please leave. He did so. Soon after, we actually held our event at Congressman Clay's. We decided to show up and proceed to interrupt it. Yes.
Oh yeah, and also, like, when they attacked us, his secretary revealed one of the members, like, her full name.
Mm. Yeah. And screenshots of their conversation.
Their private conversation, yeah. And then her secretary, like, she kept calling our lawyers to get information about us because she wanted the 25 people. And, like, she flooded their phones. And, like, I got, I don't know how many calls from my lawyer. And I obviously declined because they wanted specific stories. They wanted my story. They wanted a lot of people's stories.
And not only did Clay send a unwelcome representative to our private meeting, but he had somebody message one of our members under a fake name to get him there. And so when that guy showed up, we were like so confused as to who he was. And so we had to ask him to leave.
So what do you think, I mean, what in your mind, like, why do you think there's a resistance to just having your voices be centered rather than featuring it through a picture? Do you think it's because people aren't confident that young people can speak what needs to be spoken? Or what do you think the resistance there is?
Well, specifically Congressman Clay, in 2013, he talked to JD's sister Naomi, and then he proceeded to do nothing about anything that was heard. And so this time around, we didn't want that to happen again. We didn't want to give him the publicity and then have him get reelected and not do anything all over again. And so when we went to his event, when he opened the floor up to questions, we tried to speak, and he closed questions right when we raised our hand.
No, we raised our hand after, like, the we were going to be the second question. And his secretary saw that we had our hand raised, and she said, wait. And then they kept taking other people's questions, and they knew that we had to speak. And then they're like, okay, questions are going to be over.
Did you get to ask the question?
No.
Actually, we stood up, and we chanted our way out of the meeting. And he and a representative from Arizona, I think, came out and had to address us.
What would you have asked him in the town hall if you had gotten to do so?
We had a specific question.
Yeah.
It's okay if you don't.
Yeah, I don't.
We actually had multiple asks of him. First of all, why are you using us? It was a publicity stunt in 2013, and it was a publicity stunt in 2017. Obviously, it was re-election, but we just wanted to really hear it because I feel like he just does this over and over again, and no one really puts a stop to it. So that's one of the things. When they came out, it was a whole herd of people that came out afterwards. They actually ended or paused the event. They came out very aggressive, and they were just really, really trying to get the upper hand because they did not expect what we did. So that was a good sign. We asked them why we had not been included in the event making process and not just asked to show up.
Yeah, also when they came out, the representative from Arizona spoke Spanish. So when we were speaking to Clay, the Arizona, he came to us and he started speaking Spanish. And Clay, like, backed up, started kind of smiling because he thought he had the upper hand. Mm-hmm. And we're just like, we don't want you to speak to us in Spanish because, one, what if we don't speak Spanish at all? You know, some people have been in this country since they were babies. And also because they think that just by speaking Spanish, they were going to win us over and they had control. But he was actually...
Quick thing about that, too. By switching over to Spanish, he really left out the rest of the crowd that was there with us. And I consider that inappropriate because if you're really too engaged with the people you are trying to communicate to, you would try and use the best method possible to reach all of them, not target specific ones, which I deem inappropriate.
Out of just curiosity, have you been following the news the last week or so about the teens in Florida and their kind of, like, activism? What do you think about the way that they're being received? Like, do you feel like you see some similarities there? Do you think that they're being, maybe their activism is, you know, I don't, because I've heard a few people compare it sort of differently to at least the Ferguson protests that happened here and how differently those, obviously, two groups were received. I'm just curious to know if you have any thoughts about that.
I mean, I'm proud of them. Like, I really want to be in that movement because, you know, we have siblings and, like, we're also in school too, so like we're in danger too. And I hate that they're not, some people are not taking them seriously because they're kids, but we're the ones suffering. So we have to, if we don't do it, then who's gonna do it? Obviously not the people that are supposed to, you know, protect us. So.
Well, us young people, we're the ones that are gonna change the future generations. And we're the ones that are gonna change the world because we're getting educated.
Yeah. Yeah, we're literally the future.
Yeah. What so what would a representative or what would a I guess a responsible adult in the situation? I don't know what a responsible politician in the situation, what would engagement look like to you? Like good engagement, what would that look like to you? Not so you've described kind of like photo ops or maybe kind of like quick attempts to build a relationship that aren't really deep. What would like a good relationship look like?
I think not just words, but action.
Yeah.
Would be it.
Also, I think that's such a, I'm sorry, not to interrupt you, but it's like, that's such a, I mean, I think that's in every one of these movements, right? That's mm-hmm. like what I hear young people saying, right? Like
yeah,
you need.
Because, yeah, actions speak louder than words. And by actions, it's like they're doing something.
Yeah. What were you gonna say?
Also, not avoiding conversations with us, because if you really think about it, the hands and the lives of all these DACA recipients and their families are in the lives of Congress, and they should really see the obligation that they have to the communities that they are supposed to be representing, and so they should be engaging in dialogue and conversations about how they can better themselves as leaders of the community. And that is how they will learn what the right thing to do is.
What are your relationships like with other elected officials? I mean, like city officials, statewide officials, other federal, like senators, representatives?
We are furious with Claire McCaskill.
Okay, tell us about that.
She has run away from us every chance that we have tried to talk to her. And at this point, she will not meet with us at all anymore. She calls us protesters, so she won't meet with us.
Yeah, she also, when we're outside her office, we know that her people are there, but they turn all the lights off and close the curtains so we can't see them and stuff. Yeah.
She has basically said that her support is on her terms, and that's not fair. That's not okay, because our terms are in her hands.
Yeah, and also when we were in D.C., she was there. We had a meeting with her. She was there, and she left.
She was supposed to be there.
Yeah. No, she was already there, but remember that she left.
She left before,
we got there.
Yeah, that was not only just supposed to be a meeting with her staff. It was supposed to be with her present in the room with us. And last minute, she walked out the back door.
Why do you think that is?
Because she's up for re-election.
Yeah.
And she thinks that it'll hurt her campaign.
Yeah. Do you think that's true?
I don't think that's true, because if she wants Democrats to vote for her, then she needs to be supportive of this movement, because this is a bipartisan issue, so it's not just Democrats that are supporting us. It's Republicans, too.
Yeah, I know how... You know, because they're, I mean, have you been able to talk to, you know, the other senator's office at all? Is that kind of some of your lobbying as well?
Yeah, we have. We've talked to the office of Roy Blunt, all three of them actually, in various conference calls.
We have an ongoing meeting with Roy Blunt's office.
We can set up another one just to get updates, because that's one of the things that we do not like at all, is that what you see in the news is very late. compared to what's going on every single day, because the law just changes over and over and over again. There's so many proposals being pushed. And so that's one of the good things. We do talk to them. Another thing is whenever we were in D.C., we did get to meet two senators.
No, just one.
To the, I forget where she was from, Amy. Amy. She came out, she was from...
Klobuchar?
From Minnesota?
No, we didn't. Are you talking about Kamala Harris?
I think that might have been it.
From
but
California?
Yeah, well, and it was a good interaction to see, because it shows support, unlike what these senators are showing us. It's just nothing. I've seen others close their doors. Even though they're in the same office, they just close their door.
The one from Minnesota closed their doors.
Yeah.
And it hurts, because you're there asking, begging.
Yeah.
And they just close the door. It shows you their true intentions. And it's just something that I don't want to keep seeing. I wish people were more understanding. I understand politics is very difficult. However, this is a human issue, and it should be taken with a lot more consideration.
So how are you managing, I mean, just kind of personally managing the influx of information about what is happening with these laws? I mean, because I feel like every day there's like a different court decision, there's a different change in the law, there's different, you know, there's stories, and those stories are horrifying sometimes, you know? And so how are you managing that influx of information?
Well, sometimes I'm scared, terrified, disgusted, pissed, annoyed, but then sometimes I'm just like, that's great when there's good things, but you know, it's just like exhausting.
Yeah.
I always just think about what's next on the agenda for action that we can do locally.
Why are you focused? So you, from what I understand, there's at least some part, like when you were in DC, you were affiliated with some, you went in conjunction with with a national organization, right? United We Dream.
Mm-hmm.
So how have you decided to kind of focus? Is the idea to focus here in Missouri, or have you kind of been also working with these organizations nationally? Like, what do you think is the most effective thing that you can be doing personally?
We have been working closely with an organization in Kansas City called KSMOTA, the Kansas Missouri Dream Alliance. And we've been working with them on a state level, Missouri state level.
Okay. So are you working at all? Are there things that you want in terms of local policy? Not federal, but kind of like local?
One of the major things is basically tuition. Mm-hmm. There's actually a few now, now that I think of it. The A-plus program was completely mm-hmm. denied a few years ago. And
what do you mean by that? It was completely denied?
Well, to DACA students, they're okay. No longer eligible for that. And
was that a Missouri like law? Like the Missouri legislature
that's
decided?
Only in Missouri, too.
Okay.
And also triple tuition towards anyone who is DACA.
The FAFSA.
Huh?
FAFSA.
Yeah, you also can't apply for FAFSA. Being in DACA, you can't take out loans. You can't really take out anything other than either private or mm-hmm. you have to work really and extra hard to be able to even have an education, which is already unfair as it is.
Yeah. When did that law get passed?
So
the law made it triple tuition for students?
No, well...
Depends where you're at.
It depends what schools, but it's the international student rate.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
So it's that's not, why it's triple it's tuition. So what should happen is schools should accept DACA as an in-state tuition if you're going to school in the state that you live in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a fight with individual colleges and universities that you're hoping to have, like that they personally can change their policies? Or are you saying for state schools, that's going to have to come from the legislature?
That's state schools. Private universities, you know, that's a different funding anyway. You're still not going to get FAFSA or anything, but they do try and offer and work with you a lot more than state universities still.
Schools in Illinois are a lot more open-minded to allowing DACA recipients to pay the normal rate.
So tell us why, I mean, what have you felt like you've done that you felt like has really landed? Like, it feels like this event, this whole situation with Congressman Clay, really spurred you personally into action. Is that fair to say? Like it kind more, of showed you, you know, it seems like it impacted each of you in terms of this is what we got to do to deal with, to stand up for ourselves. But what do you feel like you've done that's, you feel like this is really resonating, like this is really working?
We just call people on their bullshit.
Yeah. Give me an example.
Like Clay, he's like, oh, I'm here for the kids and stuff, but he's not. And like we had a whole, we wrote him a letter and he obviously didn't read it. And he told us that he did when he was talking to us outside. And when somebody asked him, what are the 4 points?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I don't know. But and there were only, they weren't 4 points, there were 3 points, which is obvious that he didn't read it. But like, he only wanted us for publicity and because he was getting reelected. And we're not up for that. And also, I lost my train of thought.
So you feel like it's worked for you? You feel like it's worked to say, like, you know, we're here for what we're here for, and we're not. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to put it in those simplistic terms, but like we're here for what we're here for, and we're not going to accept less than what we
deserve.
We're not going to accept less than what we deserve. And like making those real asks of the legislatures. Yeah. What are your big asks right now? Like what are the big things you're seeking? Is it meetings, or are you like, there's specific policy things on the table that you need to be in favor of or against?
Well, everything that is established in a Clean Dream Act.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, Clean Dream Act.
That's basically what we're working on at a national level. That's what we're pushing for because this is a federal issue, and that's all that we're really trying to focus on. I know there's a lot of state issues, but the task at hand should be on the national level first and then dealt with at state.
Yeah,
like we want equality, and if we have to like have meetings, we will have meetings. Like we will do anything so we can get like what we deserve.
What do you think, from your experiences going to DC, or are you in touch with other organizers in different areas of the country?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think their experiences are like versus your experiences? Do you think it's different for you here?
Yeah, I think it's really hard for us because we're small and we're just barely starting, and they like have their things. They like know what they're doing. They're like professionals. Yeah. And you know, they're like older than us. So I mean that helps and stuff, but
also when we were in DC, obviously the police in DC are very trained for protests because they happen all the time.
Yeah.
But when I was in DC, I realized that not all cops are as horrible as they are here in St. Louis. And so I think it's a lot harder to be as defiant here because the cops pose a real threat here, and they're not welcoming of us practicing our constitutional right to march and protest.
Yeah. Have you had issues with that during protests here? Or you're saying because of what you've seen here?
Slightly.
A bit firsthand, not to a like major degree, but when Trump was here and we protested him, the cops were, the looks on their faces were very threatening, and it seemed like they were trying to get a rise out of us, even though we weren't the side of the street that was being really disrespectful. It was actually the pro-Trumpers on the other side.
Wait, so you went down to the
St. Charles.
Was at the Peabody's? Or, yes. Oh, you went to St. Charles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was that like?
So there were the protesters protesting Trump on one side of the street.
Yeah.
And there were the pro-Trumpers on the other side of the street. And in the island in the middle, the cops were all in riot gear, of course.
Yeah.
But they were all facing our direction and not their direction, even though they were the ones running into the street and screaming at us, saying horribly racist things. But the cops seemed to still try to provoke some sort of riot out of us.
Where, how many people were in the kind of protesters to Trump side? Like how many compared to the size of the crowd? Was it like pretty evenly matched, or was it there were like way fewer protesters than there were people there for the rally?
Actually, there were more protesters.
Really? Mm-hmm. Huh. Were you scared at all when you were there?
There was at least four policemen per person.
Yeah. It was getting kind of scary because they kept having us get off of, like, first they told us to get off the sidewalk. So we got off the sidewalk into the grass. And then they told us to cross the street. So we crossed the street. And then they told us that we need to get off the grass, except there was a fence behind us. So I don't know how that was possible unless they wanted us to sit on the fence. And so at that point, they were just trying to be able to say that we were going against what they were telling us to do. And so at that point, we left because we didn't feel safe anymore.
Yeah. So you've talked about meetings with representatives. You've talked about, I don't know if we've talked about this yet. Is there a big part of your organization that's dedicated, like, how do you organize in terms of getting new members into your organization? Like, how do you organize kind of internally and motivate people to kind of join you? Because obviously each of you is pretty incredible. I mean, you're incredible young organizers, right? And how do you, what is that like for you, talking to other people about joining you?
It's honestly kind of hard to find them.
Yeah, especially here in Missouri, because, you know, everybody's scared to come out.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a hard time finding DACA recipients, especially. Mm-hmm. Because they're scared. Like, I just found out this girl was a DACA recipient, and I've known her for, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, they don't come out. They're scared.
Yeah.
So we're like, oh, what do you come to this meeting? They're like, we're scared. They're like, I can't make it. I have to work. I have to do this. They, like, find excuses because they're scared.
And, I mean, how do you feel about it? I mean, because... I mean, it seems like you probably understand that fear.
Yeah, right? I understand because I was scared too. Yeah. Like when my sister was talking, I was just like, I'm not related to you. I just know you from afar. But like, I got to a point where I was just like, I can't be afraid anymore. I have to take my life again. So, you know, I came out, and like, if it's going to take time for people to do that, I'm going to allow them to take their time. Because you have to feel safe. You have to be certain of what you're going to do to do it right, to like, so it feels right, you know, and for it to motivate you, you know?
Yeah.
But I understand. But I'm also mad.
Yeah.
Because, you know, yeah. But yeah.
I understand that. Okay, so talk to me about what you have coming up then. I would say one big kind of status question. I mean, do you have a prediction, or what do you think nationally is going to happen with the Clean Dream Act? Do you think it's going to pass?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I think they're going to keep delaying it. And I think it's going to be a long time before Clean Dream Act happens, but that doesn't mean that we're going to stop fighting for it.
Yeah. What is kind of on your agenda for fighting right now? What are your current projects?
Currently we're working on publicizing our mobilization that we'll be doing Friday at 5:30.
Okay.
In the Loop, actually behind Cicero's. We're gonna start that just to try and show people again, and we're actually gonna lead that. From there, we're gonna group, march, and then rally at Senator McCaskill's office on Del Mar to show her that we're still here. We're not going anywhere. We have been here. We will continue to be here because whether she cares or not, we need change. And she's not giving us what we deserve, but we're not going to stop. So that's what is on the agenda for now. We do have things coming up, but we can't give those out yet.
Sure.
Yeah.
If anybody would like to join us, you guys are welcome.
Yeah. Please do.
Get those steps in.
We need to show McCaskill that we have voices behind us and that it won't affect her campaign in a bad way to actually just start supporting like she should have started a long time ago.
Yeah.
Definitely. There's beyond that, we've also been contacting several districts, per se, that are main money sources for senators, because we have those contacts, and those contacts like us. Mm-hmm. And whether they like it or not, if there's a point of us, they can cease that cash flow. And we have to hit them where it hurts, if that's what it takes. Personally, I don't like it. I know financial troubles they might not have, but it's a bit less. Just like we have a bit less.
Yeah. Okay, let's close this up. Do you want to say, each of you, one closing thought, either about advice for people kind of finding their voice, or something that you wish people understood about what it's like to really be young and try to be active in this kind of very harsh world of state and local or state and national politics? So we'll start at this end of the table.
To start off, when you're balancing a job, school, life itself, and then on top of that, it's a threat on your life that you've always known.
Yeah.
You have to also understand that I personally am out here and doing more than the normal, than the average person already, and then I take it onto the organizing, and it's an even bigger push. So all I ask is to communicate, to talk to those people that you don't know, to talk to those people that might seem like strangers, to talk to those people that you may or may not even know you hate, or may or may not even know you might love.
Yeah.
Because communication is key to everything, so talk.
First of all, to open your eyes and listen, because that is the best thing to do, to learn, and also that we may be young, but we are to be taken seriously, because nothing about what we're doing is just playing around. We are absolutely serious, and we will not stop until we get what we deserve.
Can you ask the question again?
No, you're good. So just kind of a closing thought, and I think you've talked about this. I mean, you talked about this a little bit, just in terms of what do you want people to know about interacting with young activists, particularly in something that is as serious and is as such a personal and such a crucial issue as the ones y'all are organizing around. What do you want people to know about what it's like to be young and trying to be active?
You know, I want the young activists to believe in themselves, because you have to believe in something for it to make it happen. And also for the people who don't believe in them, that we are people too, and we have feelings, and we are not meant, we're young, but we're powerful, and if we want something, we will get it, especially if it's something we deserve, like human rights.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, and you know, I think we're all thankful that you are taking the stance that you are and using your voices. So thank you for coming on our show.
Thanks. Any final thoughts, Steve?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I almost died.
Okay. Thank you. No, you're good. We'll edit it out.